Welcome to Cast of Wonders, the fiction audio magazine for young adults featuring stories of the fantastic. I'm Graham Dunlop. Today, we present part two of Peanut Butter and Jellyfish by Guy Stewart. If you missed part one, it's episode 20, the last one back. We gave Guy's bio last episode, so check the show notes for ep 20 if you want to know more. Or you can find out more about Guy at sfwa.org/members/G Stewart. That's G-S-T-E-W-A-R-T. And now we've the rest of a tale to tell. Khalid spent the night in the bubble and barely managed to climb the ladder and flop onto the floor the next morning. He was lying on his back with his eyes squeezed shut when Moreau said, "Do you need help, sir?" Wheezing, Khalid replied, "Back spasm. Ah! Wake the teens and get them on deck." "Sir? There's a pod of migrating humpbacks nearby." "Aye, aye, Capitan." Moreau snapped a salute and hurried out, then came back and said, "Can we come too?" Khalid growled as he got to his hands and knees, muttering, "I don't need a certified nursing assistant yet," and stood up, using Moreau as a cane. "Oh, fine, you can all come." "Aye, aye, Capitan," Moreau exclaimed and was gone. By the time Khalid had dressed, downed four painkillers and hobbled over to the catamaran, he'd loosened up. At the slip, he looked down at Moreau and Jules. The teens stood alongside him. Khalid said, "I asked Nick to stay behind." Jules and Moreau scowled. "I hope we can find the barge when we get back." Neither assistant smiled. He turned to the teens. Mosa, Luz, Meremi and Himivi manifested peer pressure and pod crowding with a vengeance, forcing Asher and Ifhufe to stand side by side and apart from the group. Khalid motioned the four down to the cat. "I've located a tagged pod of humpback whales passing nearby." Khalid slithered down after them. He waved Asher and Ifhufe off, saying, "You two will stay behind to scrape and paint the anti-gravity impeller units." He looked up as Nick appeared. The redhead held out two buckets of paint and brushes. He waved and called out, "We've got a little work to do while the others get to swim with the humpbacks."
"That's not fair," Asher exclaimed.
Ifufe did the same, though Khalid didn't exactly understand the words. He signaled Moreau, and the cat moved into open water. Luz watched the barge recede, then said suddenly, "Why do you study jellyfish, Dr. Musrick? Whales must move more water than jellyfish can." Khalid pulled the bubble mask over his face and said, "Testing. 1, 2, 3. Can you hear me now?" He signaled for them all to finish suiting up and for Moreau to bring them to a stop. "Let's get in the water and I'll answer your question, Luz." He jumped. Himivi was the first one to drop in behind Khalid. A humpback breached as she hit the water and she bleated in terror. Ifufe dove in after her, popping to the surface, folding his diving suit around her and trilling a whistle of exhilaration. They talked in whistles, clicks and beak snaps until she calmed down. Mosa and Luz followed. The humpbacks appeared and disappeared in the dim light. Khalid signaled Jules, who said, "To answer Luz's question, it seems logical that whales would move more water, but most people don't know about hydrological friction." Himivi clattered, "What's that?" Jules continued, "Hydrological friction occurs when water molecules rub against each other. Friction increases the larger an object gets. The amount of water that moves along with it is cancelled out by the increase in friction. Jellyfish move with less resistance than whales, so the turbulence they create is proportionally greater, and more water ends up moving with them than with whales.
Huh? Said Mosa.
As the wake of a humpback pushed the entire group further from the cat, Khalid said, whales move faster than jellyfish because when they push against immovable water, it pushes them back much harder than it does a jellyfish. The small amount of water a jellyfish moves doesn't have a lot of friction because it doesn't weigh much. A whale can push much more water, but there's so much friction that very little water actually moves. Both Huita popped to the surface. Khalid scowled and came up beside them saying, get back, Ifufe exclaimed, the boat's sinking!
What?
Khalid saw Moreau disappear into the starboard catamaran hull and emerge with a bucket, bailing over the side, then going back down.
Come on! The whole group was there in moments. Everybody keep your suits on in case the cat goes down. Jules, pass out bail buckets. Set up a line. I'll get the pump started.
He scrambled to the bridge across the tilting web while the teens followed Jules. He tried to call the barge, but got nothing but static. Scanning the horizon, looking for it, he muttered, where'd you go? Turning back to the wheel and screens, he entered the command to start the pumps. Nothing happened. He swore, re-entered the command, and stepped back as an error message popped up.
What?
The cat shuddered. He left the bridge, moving along sanded hull walkways, and stopped at the stairs down into the port hull. Water sloshed below. He turned and scurried across the netting to the starboard hull and said to Moreau, we're sinking! Moreau didn't answer, taking a bucket passed up from Ifofe and dumping it over the edge and tossing it back down. He said, the computer system's been hacked and crashed. The barge is out of sight and I can't raise them on the satellite comm system. Moreau gave him a wide-eyed, frightened look. Khalid frowned. Moreau had never once appeared scared. Khalid said, keep the team bailing. I've got a trick or two up my sleeve. He skittered back to the bridge to reboot the computer. When that failed, he hurried to the back of the bridge and slid open a cupboard door, removed a package of rain ponchos, and opened a secondary door hidden behind it. There he found a steel panel of very old-fashioned switches and transparent buttons, glowing green or amber, and labeled in engraved white lettering. One flashed red. Khalid pressed it. It went out for a moment. Then from deep in the cat came a chugging sound. The cat lurched, and the water between the hulls churned as an ancient secondary pump pushed them forward. Moreau stopped bailing. Khalid shouted, don't stop now, I just got us moving! Moreau nodded, shouted below, and got the buckets bailing faster. 20 minutes later, Khalid saw the comm dish of the barge starboard. He turned the cat and aimed at it. Jules was up top now, so he shouted to her, we should be back to the barge in 15 minutes or so. Shortly, Khalid saw Nick on the prow of the bridge. Asher and Ifufe stood with their backs to the living area. Closer still, and he could see that Nick looked worried, and Asher and Ifufe looked terrified. Nick cried out, cupping his hands around his mouth, where have you been? Khalid brought the listing cat into the slip. Nick was there, holding out his hand to pull Khalid aboard. You disappeared from the scanner and there's something wrong with the comm. I was going to shut down the system and reboot. Khalid said, get the lift under the cat before it goes under all the way. The crew got the cat positioned so the mechanical fork could lift it free of the water while the teens helped where they could. Once it was up, water poured from two round holes, smaller than a human child's hand, that had been bored into the twin hulls. Khalid, Jules, Nick, and Moreau, as well as the 6 high school students, stared in silence.
Who would do such a thing?
Jules exclaimed. Nick swept his gaze across the students and balled his fists, taking a menacing step towards them. All six shrank back as he snarled, "The saboteur is standing in front of me!" Moreau and Jules scrambled up to the barge's main deck. Jules shouted at Nick, "Stop scaring the kids!" With his back to Khalid, Nick shouted something. Maremi shrieked and flailed her tentacles of manipulation at Ifofe and Himivi. Moreau spun on Luz and Mosa, who were pointing at Asher. Dr. Musrek raised his thumb and middle finger to his mouth and whistled a single shrill, deafening note. Six pairs of eyes and three trios of eye bars spun to him. He shouted, "Moreau, take Asher and Maremi to patch and clean the catamaran. Nick, Himi V and Luz, take the Zodiac and herd tuna for dinner. Bake it in the fire pit. Boil up a kettle of pasta. Don't forget to stir or it'll burn. Make an Alfredo, then scrape barnacles off the impeller nacelles. You can paint them if you get done early." Nick's eyes bugged. Khalid continued, "Jules, you, Maremi and Mosa, swab the barge deck. Take apart and refurbish everyone's diving gear and ID. Scan and catalogue the jellyfish images I made today." He smiled at each one of his crew, who stared at him open-mouthed. He climbed to the barge's deck, saying, "I'll see you over baked tuna and spaghetti tonight." Striding across the deck, he made for the bridge, climbed to the high roof, and passing the wheelhouse, crept around it to the roof of the galley. He found the comm sabotage at the base of the dish. Someone had unplugged the cable. He sat down, back against the wheelhouse, and had Davandrea Jackson Frazier on Moreau's cell phone moments later.
"Antoine?" her voice asked.
"No, this is Khalid. I'm using Moreau's phone because he's busy sucking water out of the catamaran that almost sank with our extraterrestrial guests and three human teenagers on it." He gave her a synopsis of the past 36 hours, then said, "The Earth grant was supposed to give me credibility to apply to the Observers Group, not turn my life into a teen mystery movie, Ms. Jackson Frazier."
Dee Dee cleared her throat and then replied,
"As I pointed out, Dr. Musrek, human-huitar relations are tense right now. The arguments and intrigue on the barge seem to be reflecting what's going on all over Earth and wheat."
Khalid's lips thinned to near invisibility. Then he said, "Someone drilled holes in the cat and is bent on messing with my science," he snarled,
"and I will not have it."
She paused and said, "I'll contact Interpol."
Startled, he said, "You think it's that serious?"
"It's an interstellar incident, Doctor. Yes, I do."
He grunted, then said,
"Thank you. Would you also please send me everyone's complete security dossiers?"
"What?"
"I've been infiltrated by someone who wants to demonstrate that war between humans and Huitar is inevitable. I may be able to take care of it here if you send me the dossiers."
Her silence had the feel of intense attention.
"If they can surreptitiously drill holes in the cat and sabotage the comm, they can commit interstellar murder with all its complications."
"Fine. You'll get your files in encrypted form on your pad in a few moments. Your mother's birth date is the decryption key."
"Thank you," he said.
By the time he got down to the living area, the files were waiting for him. He sat in the forward hanging chair, and with a few keystrokes, he set his pad to decrypt them. Once he had readable documents, he watched as the kids passed the broad picture window overlooking his fire pit. After the first hour, it was clear that not only were his teens and crew a microcosm of the human Huitar situation, they were a microcosm of human-human relations and Huitar-Huitar relations as well. What did that do to his science? He groaned as he stood up and said to himself, "Nothing.
Science is a systematic knowledge base or prescriptive practice that's capable of resulting in a prediction or predictable type of outcome. He tucked his compad under one arm. Grasping his hands behind his back like a privateer, he let himself out of the living area, leaned forward, and began an inspection of his ship as he muttered, "Nothing more, nothing less." The fire pit held a huge pot of boiling water surrounded by mirrors. He squinted to see three figures near the horizon in the zodiac fishing. It looked too normal. Who would have motive to wreak chaos on a 10-day cruise? The high school teens were no doubt brilliant, but unfamiliar with the barge. Not one would be able to find and use an underwater drill and a bit to cut holes in fiberglass hulls in less than 2 days. The holes might have been drilled months ago and plugged and a student instructed to pull it. But why so early in their tour? And to sabotage the comm and the regular cat engines, he shook his head. That left Jules, Moreau, and Nick. He loved all of them like grandchildren, and while there were plenty of people who'd profit by discrediting him, who would have enough influence to suborn one of them? How could he smoke out a saboteur? He spent the rest of the afternoon dogging all 9 crew members, scowling and making notes on his pad until each one jumped whenever they crossed his path. By sunset, 9 of them sat in silence, eating ravenously and intently, staring into the flames while the barge ploughed over a calm ocean. Khalid fasted. Usually it helped clear his thoughts and increase his focus on what was at hand. But like the false calm on the surface around them, with the water below seething with drifting death, frantic chase, and ultimate terror, so his thoughts this night mirrored that turmoil. Long experience led him to believe that the young humans and Huitar were no different. He stood up. Every eye and eye bar on him, he could offer no solutions. He turned and walked away into the living area where he dropped down into the bubble, locked the hatch, and settled in for the night. After an hour, he was squirming. After another hour, he could no longer sit still and climbed out. He spent the rest of the night ostensibly prowling the deck, but in fact watched over them all. By dawn's first light, he brought up the nanofiber Chinese junk sail, and the barge rode before the mild morning wind. Moreau, Jules, and Nick roused themselves and got the teens up, passing out granola bars, coffee, and hot chocolate. Khalid sat down, grabbed one of the breakfast bars, and munched. Himi V said, "I know you don't know my..." She used the untranslatable word again. "But I understand your work here better now. You should meet her." He nodded. "I've been thinking about what she discovered. I'll be sure to do a bit of research after you folks have..." Something slammed the barge from below. Meremi shrieked. Moreau and Nick were on their feet, looking over the edge of the prow. Moreau straightened, shaking his head. "I don't see anything. Probably a whale or shark nudging us." A moment later, the barge shuddered again, and again, and again. Khalid snapped, "Nick, Jules, get to the bridge, go to manual and avoid whatever's ramming us. Moreau, help me herd the others into the living area." Nick and Jules sprinted for the ladder. Moreau spoke as he and Khalid herded the youngsters. "Everyone move to the living area and into your diving gear. Seal it." He had them into the living area a moment later, then went to the prow and leaned over, but saw nothing. Biting his lower lip, Khalid slipped into the bubble, dogging the hatch behind him automatically. The water was brilliant turquoise from the bright morning light above. A massive grey torpedo shape grazed the bubble and slammed into the steel hull of the barge. The ship shuddered. A second, larger shape swiped the hull, the sound of teeth grating on metal, shivering the water. "Sharks!" he cried. Great whites, no less. Nothing short of a military attack would sink the barge, but if someone fell into the water and the sharks were hunting, something had attracted them to the barge. Three great whites never showed up in the same spot in the middle of the Pacific outside of breeding season. Slithering back up into the living area, he sealed the hatch behind him. He said to the teens and Moreau, "At least two great white sharks are ramming the hull." All three Huitar bleated in terror. The three humans locked their arms around the Huitar. "Don't worry, the great white is so sensitive to electrical current that..." The barge rolled as if the ocean were surging. The forward door opened and Jules charged in terrified and cried, "It's over 6 meters long!" Moreau ran past her and slammed the door in her face. Khalid heard the bolt drop across it from the outside. He ran to it and tried pushing it open and bounced off muttering, "Idiot!" Jules stared at him in amazement, then helped him up. She said, "You have to stay here. Nobody on this ship is more important than you are." He pulled away from her and said, "The 8 of you are more important than anything else."
"There's 9 of us," said Asher.
"I'm excluding the saboteur. They deserve to die."
"Who is it?"
whistled Himi V. "One of the two men outside," said Khalid. He strode across the living area deck to the door leading forward. He said, "Jules, stay here. The barge is built to stay afloat no matter what." It tipped forward as they were rammed aft. He hurried through the hall to spiral stairs leading up, climbing, popping the hatch and stepping inside. It was empty. He dogged the hatch. The barge listed again from an underwater impact. He staggered, then dragged himself to the starboard window in time to see three huge dorsal fins cleave the water, racing away from the barge, then submerging. Ahead of them, a fourth great white breached the water, throwing itself into the air, one eye aimed at the barge. Only a tailored mix of biological chemicals could have attracted so many great whites. The saboteur had to know chemicals very well. His fingers flew across the control keyboard and he leaned forward to the retinal scanner when the computer asked him to present some form of ID. A moment later it blipped and told him, "The username or password you entered is incorrect." The bridge door flew open as Great Whites rammed the barge again, tilting it to port. Nick staggered, exclaiming, "Dr. Khalid, what are you doing here?" Khalid turned to face the redhead, steadied himself on the wheel and said, "I could ask you the same question." Nick frowned. "I came up to charge the nacelles and get us out of here." "I came up for the same reason, only to find myself locked out of the system."
"What?"
"Where's Moreau?"
"I haven't seen him."
"Try to log in." Khalid stepped back.
Nick hesitated, then stepped forward to key in the command and leaned into the retinal scanner. He swore and stepped back, exclaiming, "The username or password I entered can't be incorrect."
"I got the same message."
He took a deep breath through his nose and pushed Nick aside.
"Out of the way."
He squatted, opened a storage cabinet, emptied it, then slid open the door at the back and studied the old-fashioned control board. It was identical to the one on the cat. He depressed a mechanical button. The barge stopped rocking and the water a meter out from every side flattened the glass smoothness.
"Get us out of here," he said to Nick, who stepped to the wheel, hitting the impeller driver.
The barge slid forward, pressing down the waves around it like a steamroller. Khalid said, "Take us to Honolulu. Notify International Police HQ that we're coming in with a saboteur and traitor to humanity." He stepped to the door, slid down the ladder banister and dropped into the hallway, striding down to the living area. Someone had barred it from this side. He could hear Jules with the teens inside, pounding on it, demanding to be let out. Nick was overhead, banking the barge to take them to Hawaii. Khalid went down the hall and knocked on Moreau's cabin door. It opened a moment later on his grad student, who blinked owlishly, eyes red and puffy. He dragged his forearm and wrist over his upper lip and nose, looking very young. Khalid asked, "Care to clarify why you did this?" Moreau stepped back and dropped into the desk chair, leaving way for Khalid to sit on the neat bunk bed. Moreau didn't hesitate.
"After my grandparents and the rest of the Front de Libération de Quebec, you read the dossier, right?"
Khalid nodded.
"After they were detained, brainwashed, or executed, my family was disgraced. We moved to South Texas, but Canadian Special Services had the American CIA spy on us. Dad couldn't take it anymore and killed himself. Mom went on welfare. My sisters and brother..."
He stopped talking, dropping his head in his hands again.
"I had to make something of myself, distinguish myself by intellectual greatness. But my stupid research is meaningless."
"I would have stood by it.
The interaction of ocean salts and marine mammal blood chemistry wasn't going anywhere."
Khalid glanced at the high window to see clouds moving rapidly past. He shrugged and said, "No, it wasn't."
"It was my last chance to regain the family honor."
When he looked up from weeping, his face was smeared with snot. Khalid handed the boy a tissue. Moreau blew his nose and said,
"Am I going to prison?"
Khalid leaned back and said, "Well, your great white shark attractant worked very well, and no one's dead." They sat in silence until Khalid continued, "This is as good a chance as any for you to change your dissertation to tagging tuna with specific GFE proteins so that a fluorescent light scan could identify specific individuals."
"That's boring."
He wiped his nose and his forearm again. "Well, why not attract great whites with your magic potion and mark them with GFE proteins? We still don't know much about them, and they're frightening, but endangered nevertheless." He frowned, looking Moreau in the eye, and said, "Reversing the attractive effect might be helpful too." Moreau looked hopeful. Then he dropped his head into his hands again.
"Everyone's going to think I was trying to kill the Huita, or start an interplanetary war or something."
"You won't start a war. The politicians have already done that." Khalid stood up. "I just wanted to confirm that Nidaria are agents of terrestrial global temperature stabilization." He scowled down at Moreau and added, "If you'd managed to kill all of us, it would have been a byproduct of your suicide." Moreau looked startled. "You need a dissertation that will get you noticed. There are very few things in the ocean more noticeable than great white sharks." Moreau nodded and sat up straighter. Khalid jerked his chin upward. "Now let Jules and the students out. Go give Nick a hand, and I'll call off Interpol." Moreau's eyes grew large and his mouth opened like a fish.
"Go!"
Moreau scurried. Khalid strode back out to the deck as Jules shouted, "If I ever catch the person who locked us..." She must have noticed Moreau. As she chased Moreau up the ladder, Khalid called, "Kill him later. You did a good job with the teens. Now help us get into Honolulu. We need to check the hull for damage from the Great Whites and get the cat properly repaired. How long do you think that'll take us?" Jules looked down at him and blinked. Her eyes looked up, left, calculating.
2-3 days, max," she said.
Khalid said, "Think we can find something for the teens to do during that time?"
"You mean, besides help us get back in running trim?"
He gave her a disgusted look and said, "Something that will stretch their minds and inculcate a real love for science."
"Oh, that," she shrugged. "We'll think of something."
She paused, bit her in the cheek and said,
"Did you talk Moreau out of his dumb doctoral thesis?"
He smiled a bit. "We'll see." she made a face as she came back down. You realize if you did, he'll spend another 3 years on the barge with us. Khalid scowled as she saluted and said, Off to work, Captain. Come on, crew, let's get this tub into port and back up to speed. As she passed through them, the herd of teen monkeys and needleless cactuses followed her as if they were chicks and she a hen. Moreau's phone vibrated. Glancing at the caller ID, Khalid rolled his eyes. He touched the screen and it lit up. Dee Dee's image projected up in 3 dimensions from the screen. What? Is there any way to greet your savior? Are you going to release me from the visitor requirement of the grant? Dee Dee rolled her eyes. Don't be ridiculous. The vids your kids have been sending have lifted your science spy status into the top 10. Everyone's been glued to their compads. The Great White's leaping are the number one watched WeTube on SolarNet. She shook her head. I have a request from the Huita to allow the ambassador permission to visit the barge. Khalid sighed and said, Oh, what else? She wanted to know if she could bring some friends along. Oh, I can't say no, can I? Only I'm allowed to say no. You said something about good news. Yes, Himivi's root parent twice removed was a research scientist before becoming Huita ambassador to Earth. She's invited the observer group along and all but one accepted. I hear she didn't have to pull in any favors to force Dr. Brett Cianhayes to come with despite her protests. Khalid blinked, opened his mouth, squeaked, closed his mouth. Dee Dee added, See you in Honolulu, Dr. Musrek. She paused. You know, with a name like Musrek, I figured you had to be good. She paused again. And you are. Her image vanished, and Khalid leaned against Nick's banking the barge as it raced for port. And so ends Peanut Butter and Jellyfish. We hope you enjoyed this story. Drop by the forum and tell us what you think of it. We'd love to hear from you. Now, next episode will be the last for 2011, as we're taking a break over the festive season. But don't worry, we'll be back in 2012. So join us one final time this year for Rust by Brian Griggs. Cast of Wonders is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Share it, but don't change it or sell it. Theme is Appeal to Heavens by Alexei Nov. MusicAlley.com.